KPFT car or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's episode, Technology Bites, 90.1 FM, KPFT, or not, whatever, like we care. I don't care.
We care. Part 27, The Gathering Storm.
Welcome to Technology Bites.
All right. All right.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be...
All right.
Welcome to Technology Bites, the perfect show. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Flicked.
I halfway did. It's just so weird having Pete here. Human talks, and I go next.
I'm just so glad. Wow. I'm so glad that we could still screw it up.
Glad it wasn't me.
Take three.
Deja vu.
All right.
Feeling that you've...
Everyone concentrate.
Hello and welcome to Technology Bites for tonight. Thanks.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicked.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Roofhouse.
Perfect show.
Eventually.
Perfect show. Take three.
Are we done? Can we go?
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
We'll clean this up in post-production.
Just a lot of control C, control V to pad it out to 2 hours.
Oh, listen to you. All clever with your keystrokes.
Everyone should hop on Google Chat.
On Google Chat?
Yes.
Why?
I know how to send ponies.
Oh.
Have you guys seen this?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Do we have to?
You will, yeah.
Can't you just do it in IRC?
Also, Shy Dinosaur?
Yeah. My favorite is if you type in slash. So if you get on Google Chat, I don't know if it needs to be mobile. I've done it on a laptop.
No, I did it on a laptop.
Okay, so yeah, go into a laptop and type in / pony stream. and just prepare. And then later on during the show, we'll tell you how to turn it off. Pony stream will start, though.
Well, I tried to trout slap you in IRC just now, Barrett, and it didn't do anything. So I guess we don't have that configured in our IRC channel.
No, I've got trout protection.
Don't accidentally type slash brony stream.
You have floundered.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I fear I've lost control before ever having it. All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. You may not be so happy, but welcome to the show. It's another exciting episode of Technology Bites. You can visit us online at geekradio.com and learn all you need to learn about checking out the podcast or upcoming Geek Gatherings, which we're a little ways off from Geek Gatherings. We're not going to push that just yet, but there will be one in your future. You want to check that out. And also hanging out on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
In the channel Tech Bites. If you got your own client, just feel free to join right up. Or you could go to the Geek Radio site and use our IRC client there. And it looks like we got a pretty good house of people inside there. Not all of them are just us, so that's kind of cool. And it's the show within a show. You can say whatever you want up until the point that you get kicked back. What have you done, Barrett?
The pony stream.
Streaming ponies.
Is there a Google Hangout for this show yet?
Do we have to have one? Peter's here.
I think we should, because I've got ponies.
Do we really need to have like another 10 minutes of
us flailing
at technology?
To make that work, we need 20 minutes. Yeah, we need to diddle around with that for 20 minutes and then have it not work.
Okay. You know, speaking of ponies, you should read Popat.
Oh, I'm familiar.
Yeah, well,
he
has a whole thing he does when marketers contact him about providing content for his website. He kind of lures them on in, and then he sends them this letter about how he would like for them to write original content for a site about ponies. Usually they'll just drop off, but, you know, he's got a pony thing going on. I figure you and him could kind of brony up. All right, so if you want to participate in tonight's show, the phone number is 713-526-5738. That is the number to dial if you want to be on the air with us. We will take interesting calls. If you want to chime in about the conversations that we're having, that'd be awesome. If you have a really unique or odd problem that is not related to your Palm OS or a computer you fished out of a dumpster, then
we might... spyware that you got spyware. by going to sites that you knew damn well what was going to happen if you went there.
Right. So, all right. So we got Peter Hughes in the studio.
Woohoo!
So that's a good thing. We're going to get to have the interactive Technology Bites info shot where we can kind of chime in on whatever it is that he is telling us about. So that's something to look forward to. So we'll play the info shot intro and then do the info shot. Take it away, info shot.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Will we?
1, 2, 3, 4.
They ripped the stuff off the CD and put it onto the computer, and so this is the first time I'm actually using a computer to play all of the stuff instead of a CD. So I feel like I've moved into the late 90s.
Nice.
Computers are fun and useful.
Computer.
What could possibly go wrong?
Uh-oh. Oh, there. Uh-oh. Echo is what could go wrong. I think we've got a hangout. So I see Jay.
Should we manually do the info shot? Just make noises. It's the Technology Bites info shot directed into your brain.
Injected
with Peter Hughes in your brain.
Take it away.
Get him out of your brain.
Wow, computers have made my life so much easier.
So you don't have the CD.
I'm just thinking tech news in your membrane.
Tech news in your membrane. All right.
I don't know.
So how does that Hangout things work?
To the tune of insane in the membrane.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Type in slash.
I mean, if you want a bunch of people to join it, but not actually have their video and talking. If you want them to be guests.
Shouldn't we have figured this out before the show?
I'm just asking. I thought somebody might know it.
You mean be a watcher and not a hanger-outer?
Yeah.
Not
who called this
hanger-oner?
Anyway, I put an invite in the IRC, so anybody on the IRC can join the Google Hangout.
That's why I'm on his channel now, because I clicked the link on the IRC.
I'm not joining your crazy hangout.
All right, well, I'm going to do the news then.
All right.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, so you remember last week, the freak vulnerability? And it wasn't like a freak thing like, oh, this never happens, but freak as in...
Aw, freak out!
as in the acronym actually means something. Factoring attack on RSA export keys.
Wait a minute.
So that you can win stuff in bars.
How do you get freak out of that? Factoring attack out of...
Ferret. F-A-R-E-T. E-T, so it should have been the ferret. Factoring RSA export keys, I think.
Does your website have a weasel in its pants?
Or on its woodpecker? Anyways, yeah, no, everybody knows what that reference is to. No meetings with the station director from that one.
Weasel on the woodpecker.
Woodpecker, check.
He said wood. Anyways.
Oh, the inside jokes keep rolling. This has got to be pure entertainment. All right.
For tens of people outside of
you, we have to start the news over again at this point.
All right. So the freak, how do you...
Anyways.
The freak, is it an acronym?
So remember last week, to just get you all up to speed, the freak exploit was a problem for Apple and... You know, for Apple and its browsers and Chrome, but not Microsoft. Well, this week, Apple has put out a patch for Mountain Lion Up to fix the freak vulnerability. But the new news is, so Apple people, if you put that patch in, you shouldn't have to panic. Microsoft people, time to panic. It turns out that they are also vulnerable. So you want to pay attention to that and look for a security patch coming soon. The big thing is that it was using legacy export-grade keys from the 1990s, which made it vulnerable for somebody to decrypt or modify your SSL connection.
Yeah, when a web client and a web server first meet, they have a conversation. And then a baby web server.
It's like a key party in the 70s.
Yeah. So the whole thing about this vulnerability is when a client and a server negotiate an HTTPS connection, they have to agree upon a cryptographic key, and not just that, they have to agree upon the strength of that cryptographic key. And generally, a web server will say, when this negotiation happens, the web server will be like, "Well, I've got this protocol, and I've got this cipher, and I've got this cipher, and this cipher, and this cipher," and the web server will say, "And I would prefer it if you would use my preferred cipher," and then the web browser, as on your end, will be like, usually, if it's an up-to-date web browser, it will say, "That's fine, we can use that, let's do it." They'll negotiate their key, and then they'll be good. This vulnerability, though, allowed a third party to force both the web browser on your end and the web server on the other end to use a very weak key. And that key could then be brute forced, and then they could the third-party attacker could monitor that traffic. So this fix has applied to the desktop side, to web browsers, and there's a separate set of fixes, one for Apache and Nginx. I don't think was vulnerable in the first place if it was an up-to-date version. IIS, I think, has been fixed. Anyway, this has to be fixed on both ends. But but if one of them was vulnerable, the other one should be... Or, I'm sorry, if one end was secured against it, the other end should be okay, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't install the fix. You should install it ASAP.
There you go. And that weak key was already back in the 90s when they mandated that for export use. They already knew they could crack that back then.
That was the whole point.
So it's not like...
That was why they did it.
It was so that in the U.S. you could have something that was hard to crack, but that overseas they couldn't. Well, so Apple did say they were going to patch it in a week, and they were good to their word. It did come out. I certainly installed it. When something comes through, especially on your computer, when it comes through and it says security update, that doesn't mean they're going to start... Yeah, they're not... That's not... To give you an Apple contrast and to foreshadow some of the rest of the show, when you do your iOS update, the next one that comes, that one's going to try and sell you a watch. But this is a security update on your laptop, and you would definitely, or your desktop, and you would certainly want to have that. Let's see, another Apple news, just a quickie one. If you have an iPhone 5, just a 5, no S, no... there's been, some of them have had battery issues. And one thing that has quietly happened is Apple has extended the battery replacement program into 2016. So, you know, prior to the change, iPhone 5 owners could swap out faulty batteries for, quote, 2 years after the first retail sale or until March 1st, 2015. They didn't announce the change formally, but their dedicated webpage reflects a new coverage so that it will go it will provide owners of faulty equipment a full 3 years of component coverage. So if you happen to have an iPhone 5, then you know you can you don't have to worry about the battery going south on you and getting you know being out of luck on that because the program expired. So they did right by it, but of course they didn't like trumpet it. And another new this isn't a try buy or fry kind of new thing, but because it's sort of a pre-announcement of an operating system update. But Google has officially announced Android 5.1, which is Lollipop still. Apparently it's been announced by the official Android blog. It's going to be a stability and performance improvement over 5.0. It isn't all bug fixes, though. Android 5.1 adds support for multiple SIM slots and HD voice on your phones, on your Android phone that already supports Lollipop. Google has only said it's rolling out 5.1. The company didn't say where. So probably it'll be, like, Nexus devices obviously are going to be probably fairly high up in the line, but in line to get it, but... the rest of you, God knows when it's going to happen, and a lot of it also, I think, depends on your cellular provider. And let's see, I don't know how many of you follow like technology news stuff. Obviously, to dig up stuff for the show and for the info shot, I do. There was a site called GigaOm, and the odd thing, I mean, it had, I think, arguably, it had very good journalism on it. It had a lot of people who were still there who were very good, and also people who had developed their skills there and moved on to other places and made a name for themselves. Well, all of a sudden, on the 9th, at the end of the business day, they basically said, we can't pay our creditors, so all operations have ceased. And they say that they don't know what the lenders intend to do with the assets or if there will be any future operations using those assets, but they did not intend to file bankruptcy. Basically, you know, it was sort of a big the end, it sounds like, for GigaOm, but, you know, obviously there's not much we can – unless there's new news, we won't be able to tell you about it, but – that was one place that, although I found that I guess that they didn't have as much exposure because I don't remember the last time I hit them for a story that I got for the info shot, which maybe that's part of why they had a problem getting enough revenue to, if they're not getting that many people coming in, then that can cause problems with your advertising and your revenues. And then if you felt a sudden stirring in the hipster drome, like 1,000 hipsters gathered in one place in Texas, well, you're not far off because South by Southwest starts on the 13th. That's the interactive part. That's the one with the all the .com-y type people, and .com-y means different things depending on what part of Texas you're in when you say it. But that is coming up, so it'll be interesting to see what news comes out of that, if any. You know, there have been past years where things like Twitter emerged out of South by Southwest and all that. I don't know, is anybody planning to go this year?
I'm not.
I think some of it is, it's like at some point it gets to where it's so cumbersome and large.
It used to be, I remember, in college and
when it was still cool and hip
in the late 90s, it was like go to South by Southwest and watch some movies. It was like, you know, watch independent films and stuff. And yeah, and now it's, I mean, I'm getting invites from all the vendors that I interact with usually at ours that I review hardware from. All of them are telling me like, hey, are you going to be at South by Southwest? Because we're going to be presenting blah, 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 blah at South by Southwest. Like, oh my gosh. I just talked to you guys all at CES, you know, and at Mobile World in like last month. Like, what do you have to do this one too?
apparently.
Yeah,
it seems to be the thing. But yeah, so the 13th to the 17th, it begins the infinite length of South by Southwest.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, just one more reason to stay out of Austin, frankly.
And then there you go. And then the biggest thing of the week, of course, was on Monday when they had the Apple Watch the big Apple Watch keynote. I did watch it. I did watch it. The funny thing is I was watching it on a place that was live blogging it, so it's the pictures and text. Actually, I watched it at Ars Technica. And then it was I thought of something I wanted to look at, and I called up the Apple website, and basically it was video streaming because I'm on a Mac and I was using Safari. So when I went to apple.com, you couldn't get to the store, but when you went to the front page of the Apple website, it automatically, and without even asking, started streaming the keynote. So it's like, okay, well, I turned off the live blogging and just watched the rest of it. But I don't think there were no shockers in the, you know, I would assume most of you should have heard sort of the news on it, but there wasn't any shocking features. You know, it doesn't levitate. It doesn't make you suddenly attractive and popular. Oh wait, that one they did announce.
I know. I had a bit of a shocking feature moment when they announced how much the high end watches were going to be.
Oh well, I was going to say that prices start at $17,000 and go down to $350. Well, and here's one thing I'll say. So the thing, you know, there's always the misleading lowest price, the $350. That's a smaller one. There's two sizes of Apple Watch. And frankly, if you want to go and window shop it, they don't have them till next month. And actually, they don't have it till April 24th is when they're going to sell them. You can pre-order them, but they won't have them before April 24th.
It's like 38 and 42 millimeters, right?
Right. But if
that's not very much difference.
If you go to the Apple store, you can try them on, and they've got people like trained to show them to you and stuff. And you can always just say, yeah, I'll be back on the 24th if you don't really want it. You don't have to worry about the whole kind of hard sell thing.
Well, I guess get them sized the Apple store and then order from China and get them several weeks in advance of everyone else.
Plus, they'll throw in two free Rolex, $250 Rolex.
I wonder if you could buy the $17,000 Apple Watch and buy the $100 Chinese knockoff and return it to Apple instead.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's going to work.
Yeah, but nobody will catch that. Yeah, well, there's some stuff where some people you wonder.
Just some disaffected gum-chewing Apple genius.
Before they go to the Genius Bar and the guy's like, no, this isn't an Apple Watch.
Yeah, I spilled something green on there. I'm not sure what it is. Don't worry about the gold.
Is it supposed to smoke and leak? But they start with, let's see, so they, you know, the things you can do with it, you can read emails on it, you can talk to Siri, you can receive calls and track fitness goals on your watch.
You can get mugged wearing it.
It's big about having about alerts. It's big about, yeah, alerts. You are about to be robbed.
Someone's approaching you from behind.
It looks like you're about to be mugged. Would you like assistance in?
I guess the biggest, quote, surprise I saw after, and some of it you wonder, did Apple, like, leak the whole, like, two-hour battery life concept to just jack with people so that then when they came out with the 18-hour battery life, it's designed to, I'll say it as carefully as they did in the keynote, basically, under normal use, their idea is that it should last you 18 hours.
Which is great for most people, right?
Well, as long as you sleep.
I think that's what he said.
That's assuming you sleep for 8 hours and that you charge it while you sleep, I guess.
Because he said, an 18-hour life, which is great for most, I'm pretty sure he said, which is great for most people, right?
So, and the other part, if you're thinking, you know, because as many of our listeners think, how much, with that $17,000 one, well, then do I throw it away when the battery goes bad? The batteries are replaceable. So if you buy the end user? I doubt that. But
if I'm paying that much for a watch, one of those Apple boys or girls is going to change my battery.
It for me.
So, they come to your house and do it.
They better put on those booties like the Comcast technicians do so they don't get mud on my carpet.
They did. The thing that's I guess, was interesting and odd. I don't know if you had this experience, if you watched the actual live announcement thing. The bands, they, like, spent all kinds of, like, time and effort on making the bands for these watches and how they manufacture them and stuff. Because you look at them and, you know, frankly, I've had watches, and it's like nobody – how often did you think about the band, you know, and how it was manufactured?
The Malamine band, like, exquisitely crafted and weave
yeah,
woven.
It's like Home Shopping Network with true diamondique. But no, the, like, mesh one is apparently some kind of the way it's
chainmail from Middle-earth. Mithril
kind of stuff, and
it only catches and pinches every third arm hair.
I find the number of choices with the Apple Watch to be somewhat overwhelming in the Apple sphere. I mean, if when I go to Apple to buy something, you know, I like having a handful of choices on my laptops or my desktops or my, you know, super desktops. But now with the watch, it's like, I feel like I could easily make the wrong decision.
It's like Swatch.
Is it?
Except with an I instead of an S.
I think the main thing is, like, figure out what kind of band you want. There's, like, a sport band that's some kind of plasticky stuff. There's a mesh band that's the, I guess, sort of middle line.
Well, you know,
metal.
I think the more important question is, you know, does the Apple Watch make smartwatches a viable concept? And in my opinion, no. Smartwatches are all terrible and stupid.
Does the $11,000 watch better. Blend?
The thing I wonder is, as and you know, obviously, just to be real upfront about it, I'm not gonna rush out and get an Apple Watch unless I win the lottery. And it wouldn't. And if I won the lottery, I still wouldn't be getting the $17,000.
But you had a Newton.
I had a Newton. Well, I had a Newton.
And he learned not to jump in.
No, I had a Newton 2000. So that means I waited the years it took before they got it right.
So yeah, and then it was yanked out from under you right after you bought it.
There was one model after mine that I would have liked to have traded up to, and then they pulled the rug out. But
I'll tell you what would get me
big,
on board
with the big screen one with the large six plus. If I was working in an office, I could see getting an Apple Watch to avoid the having to pull that out to look at it.
I would get an Apple Watch if and when I would get a smartwatch in general. If and when somebody cracks the code of producing a smartwatch that does all of the things that a smartwatch is supposed to do and doesn't require a phone to be tethered to it, when they split it fully away from you have to have a smartphone. Then I would be a little closer to being on board.
That's just going
to
be called a phone at that point. I mean, that's where it's going. It's all. Much, it's not right? going to be two different things. The phone's going to shrink so much to the point where it's like, okay, we can't really make it any physical. It'll be Zoolander
size.
You'll buy
the
losing.
Phone, and then they'll say, "Do you want the phone strap?"
Yeah.
Yes. And then you can put it around your wrist.
See, actually, as Apple things grow, you know, they start small and thin and all that, they grow. Then eventually, see, the watch is going to have a 6.5-inch screen, and you'll have to have the Apple earring, which will have the 48mm or whatever face to
it'll be like those hoop, the big, like, when you have to hollow out your earlobe and get, like, the plugs in your earlobe, be like the Apple earplug thing.
Those are gross.
And then you'll be all ready to work in the mall.
And that will truly be the most personal product Apple's made. That was one of the things they said about the watch, was it was one of the most personal products they've ever made.
Thanks. I'm just not there, man. I'm just not buying it. I'm not convinced.
It'll be interesting
and it's not
to see
just
how many
Apple,
are out in the wild.
It's anybody.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see
thing.
How many are out in the wild and to see what I guess I'll give points for cleverness. They had a Mickey Mouse watch face that
Who paid who on that, I wonder?
Huh, that's a good question.
I have a feeling Disney owes their future to Steve Jobs, so it may have been that Disney ponied up for that one.
Yeah.
But I think it's an anime. Although the thing, I saw it, and it looked like it was animated, where Mickey's sort of dancing.
He's tapping his foot,
foot. But then you kind of go, does that like reduce your battery life if you leave that sucker on all day while he's dancing on your wrist?
Oh, you can probably dance about as long as the original Steamboat Willie ran for. Just as the cartoon was over, so is your watch's life.
I did see that there's one of the Apple Watch wristbands has a place to put the charger on the band.
What?
Yeah, you know, it has a little, because you have the round charger goes on the back of the watch.
So it's a contactless charger? Is it like a... I haven't actually read up on this.
I don't know how. I'm sure I saw it. I'll have to go look.
I have no idea. I did not see that in the keynote.
No, they didn't say the keynote. I went and found it on one of the like things that showed you all the bands that were available, I think. But, you know, the little, because they show you on the back of the phone that the charger for this thing is a magnetic charger that snaps onto the back of the phone.
Yeah, inductive charging. So it looks like, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's circle inductive. Yeah.
Well,
that's why it's got an 8-hour charge cycle, because that takes actually, it's a lot longer. Yeah, like the Delta, say like you plug in, you know, like a normal phone, it might charge 1% per minute, but on the inductive charging, it's more like, you know, 1% per 3 or 4 minutes.
At least I assume it's inductive. It's also got 4 little discs on the back, but that's also to make body contact so it can measure your heart rate.
Your
and
vitals
stuff.
And report yeah. to Big
One
Brother.
Thing that's interesting with this is I don't believe this has any ports on it whatsoever.
The watch. Although it
does have buttons.
It has buttons, but it doesn't have any port. There's no cable that you have to keep track of to connect it up to your.
No, that would be yeah.
To some device to pair
just
or whatever.
Auto orients and clicks in place magnetically.
I think you actually have to choose the orientation on the phone when you set it up. When you first
whether
do it,
it's
because
left
talk,
hand or right hand.
Yeah, because you can flip it upside down if you're a lefty, so that the fob or whatever.
Surely there's. I mean, it's touchscreen, right? The phones. Yeah,
but
surely
it's got
you
the
can
knobs
can,
are on the particular side. The buttons are on the right hand side, and so I would guess that you put it the other way and.
Shame they couldn't have some. If they put that right in the middle, that could have been a ambidextrous kind of watch.
Well, now. Just on the pricing. Sorry, we started on that. We said what the high end was, and we said what the low end was. Basically, there's like a $350 and $400 version, which is the sport version, which is aluminum. And then
aluminium.
Aluminium.
Then there, yes, according to Johnny Ive, I didn't want to talk posh to you.
Aluminium.
What's
and
an
then,
aluminum falcon?
Then in the middle, there's a stainless steel one. See, okay, so there's the sport edition, and then the stainless steel is called watch. It's got, they put quotes around it in the article. And that starts at $550.
They really got into describing how they made the aluminum and how they made the stainless steel. Like, this is like some super special Apple aluminum and stainless steel.
Well, the stainless steel watch starts at $550, and I'm sure that's the smallest one with a particular band, and goes up to $1,100.
It goes up to $1,100?
100, yes. Well, which is sort of, you know, you'd think, you know, again, Jay was talking about the choices. It sounds like, based on what band you choose, you can get, all these variations in it all the way up to the $17,000. And then the gold one is in limited supply and starts at 10 grand.
It's so special.
And goes up to 17,000.
It's very special.
Which, you know, I mean, the stuff, I think I would like to go see it in person. I mean, that metal band that's the Lynx, I would like to see in person, and the sort of chainmail one I would like to see in person.
The metal band and the hair band.
There was a very valid question that people have been asking, and that's that the top end, the watch edition watch, or whatever
special edition,
whatever the hell they're calling it,
or edition,
is 18 karat gold. And so people, I had people posting on ours who were asking things like, you know, if you're going to pay thousands of dollars for this watch and it's 18 karat gold, that's going to like be deformable, right? You can like with an 18 karat gold thing the size of that watch, you'd be able to bend it.
They said it was special.
Correct. So Apple had filed a patent for a method of producing this gold alloy that retains the same amount of like gold molecules. I'm going to screw this up because it's scientific and involves metallurgy. But basically, they patented a manufacturing method to produce an 18 karat gold alloy that meets the weight definitions of 18 karat gold, but has like 3 or 4 times the strength and
it's
deformation.
Kind of
so it's comparable to the
matrix.
They called it plating.
It's basically it's not plated though. But it's not. It is legitimately an 18 karat gold watch. Like the watch weighs out the amount of gold in it is 18 carats. It's like the molecules are padded with ceramics, so it doesn't. So you can't basically take your fingernail and draw your initials into it.
You can't.
And
flake
it'll strengthen
some
it up. Sure, it won't bend as easily, right?
Correct.
At least it won't as bend as easily as the last iPhone.
And there are other high-end watches that use that same kind of technology. Actually, that go kind of farther, that have a harder alloy than the Apple.
You know what I got to say? We're making a big deal out of the price, and for any normal human being, $10,000 to $17,000 for a timepiece is a little excessive, but I've worked at places before where the sales guys at companies that I've worked at have had
Rolexes,
have had the $10,000 to $20,000 to $40,000 watches that they would show off every once in a while. You know, you hit that, you make it, have a, an amazing commission year, and you come in and you get the, you bring, you buy your Rolex or your Hublot or whatever, and you get, I mean,
if you're going to compete in the watch market, you have to have a $10,000 watch. I mean, yeah, to be up there with like a Rolex or Cartier or something like that.
All these fancy Swiss names.
Some of the pricing, the all-metal link bracelet, which is the one that I guess if you were looking at it, it's got individual metal links that are the width of the band around it. It says that that has the band itself has 100 components and takes 9 hours to cut. Where they're like,
because it's made of mithril.
It out of
I would think that they would actually have that machine instead of still getting like little Cambodian kids to do all that.
No, you have to have little Cambodian kids because their tiny fingers.
Their tears are what bond them.
We're kidding, but really, 9 hours?
The tears are the matrix for the gold.
9 hours to make one band?
That's what they said.
So they got. Like,
I'm thinking
whatever.
That's how you get was to the $1,100 stainless steel one, because I'm sure that's not the. I don't think that's the gold.
Well, one of the things they did talk about in the keynote was that, you know, these watches in many of their forms, the bands and so forth, are going to be available in the Apple Store, so you can actually go and try them.
Oh
on.
Yeah.
I mean, with the laptops and the desktops and so forth, I don't always feel compelled to go and see one in person to buy it.
Try it on.
Yeah, but this is actually a product that Apple's making where it's going to...
That said, they're going to sucker you into getting one.
Yep. So you think it sucks, but then you go and you try it out, and you're like, check out my wrist.
I want to make a very special band that's highly expensive, except it looks like it's a piece of rope that holds the
I'm just waiting
the hillbilly
for the person,
band.
With the first person I see with an Apple Watch, I'm going to ask them what time it is and watch them reach for their phone.
I thought you were going to say you're going to watch and be like, okay, hold on, let me tap, slide this over, and it takes me 30 seconds to pull the time. Actually, that's not Android Wear, so it wouldn't take you 30 seconds. It only takes you 30 seconds to look up the time on Android Wear watch.
It takes you 30 seconds to look up the time, but that doesn't count the time while the phone reboots and then shows you the nice Google logo and the animation.
Yeah, right.
I have Lollipop on my Nexus 7, and I've been watching that reboot sequence way too often since it got the update.
The original 7?
The 2013 Nexus 7.
My Android guy, Ron Amadio, works for Ars, who runs our Android news section, wrote kind of an insightful thing about the Apple Watch's approach to apps and app management versus the Android Watch approach to app management. So you get an Android Watch timepiece, or Android Wear, whatever they're calling it. You know, like the Moto 360 is like the super nice round one. I know Huawei just released one at MWC that looks really nice. LG Watch, there's one or two LG watches. Anyway, you look at it from the Android side, and Google, perhaps in response to the fragmentation of Android on mobile, has put some really heavy barriers down on what people who are making apps for these watches can and can't do. Kind of apps on the Android Watch are kind of relegated to this app ghetto that you have to swipe through a bunch of different stuff to get to. When you first look at an Android Watch, you get a card-based interface that has a lot of notifications stacked up in the time. And if you want to actually start an app up, you've got to go through two or three layers before you get to the app menu. Whereas Apple's taken kind of the opposite approach. And the home screen, when you bring it up, is apps. Apps are kind of the focus of... at least so far, appear to be the focus of the Apple Watch UI. So it's a totally divergent approach from how Google has decided to handle their watch interface. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Apple's going to get huge market share because, you know, it says Apple on it. People are going to buy it no matter what. But it'll be interesting to see.
People are already in iOS. They basically have an incentive. If they've already got an iPhone, just like if you already had an Android phone, you had an incentive for Android Wear.
Well,
I've heard Google's solution for all that notice stuff is they're going to have the first multi-screen so that you'll buy multiple Android watches.
It'll be like swatches.
Line them up on
like
your
six Android watches, like swatch
have
watches.
Three screens. You'll get to have a screen manager. And...
Well, the other thing, too, is that, I mean, everybody knows this. If you want to make money as an app developer, if you want to make money on a mobile platform, you develop for iOS. If you have a passion about your apps and you love Android and you love open source, you know, you might also, you might start out developing for Android, or
you wanted to see your app pirated around the world,
or you might fork to Android or whatever. But anybody who's, who is attempting to actually make money as a developer in the mobile space is doing it on iOS. That is, that's the platform.
They're the only ones that charge for the charge for apps. And that concludes the first of our 6-part series on the iWatch. Second part.
It's got an iWatch.
Yeah. No, it's not iWatch. That actually might be trademarked by somebody, I think. But yeah, so that's, I mean, they've got the ecosystem, they've got the developer support. They're going to do well, at least for the first couple of years. I can't imagine they're not going to just knock it out of the park.
They're saving the iWatch name for when they put a camera on the watch, and then they'll stop using that name after the first upskirt photo person gets caught with their iWatch.
I don't know. That would be kind of, you'd have to like get your watch down there. Like,
well, I don't wear skirts,
but in certain ways, you know, the iWatch. I guess the iWatch was big anticipation. The rumors about a Retina MacBook Air, Retina display MacBook Air, technically not true because they announced the MacBook, just MacBook.
Bringing it back.
So there's MacBook Air, MacBook. Although you wonder, is the deal that, if you think about it, ultimately if the MacBook Air, if that sort of falls off eventually, then you've got MacBook and MacBook Pro again.
Right.
But they did announce a Retina display laptop. And I guess, you know, in thinking about it now, thinking back on it, you can see the difference in sort of the showmanship. Because remember when the MacBook Air was announced?
I do remember.
When it came out in a manila envelope.
That's right. Steve Jobs made a big deal out of it. And that first iteration MacBook Air, frankly, except for the design, from a hardware perspective, was crap.
And but until you saw the, you know, that they introduced
it was groundbreaking,
the,
though, yeah.
They introduced the new MacBook by like showing like the shell of it and talking about how the batteries were layered
the unibody
in
construction.
Things like that, which that's cool, but you know, it's like get them first, you know, show them how sexy it is first, and then talk about why.
Well,
it's
there's
so great,
there's so much more press focus now. I mean, the original, the MacBook Air was introduced what, in 2008, I think, is when they dropped the first one, and Apple even in 2008 wasn't like didn't have just the absolute worldwide crazy intense scrutiny that it did today. Back in 2008, Apple could still reasonably expect to have a presentation where the presentation wasn't totally leaked beforehand. even then, although, I mean, that was kind of the end of that era as stuff started to ramp up. But, I mean, now, you know, everybody kind of knows going in, generally, what the presentations are going to be about. Even with this one, people thought, like, the design that the MacBook showed up as, we saw pics of that out on, like, Mac Rumors and 9 to 5 Mac. They had that leaked for weeks, but it was misidentified as everybody was saying, this is the new MacBook Air, which obviously it wasn't.
Yeah, where it'd go in between the 11 and the 13, and what would the pricing be, and so on.
Yeah, they did Broadwell refreshes across the board, which is good, because that'll make for awesome battery life. Yeah. Jay's showing us funny pictures.
it's a picture. Matthew Inman from the Oatmeal did a tweet, and he said, "Hey, bro, you got the time? Yeah, it's just hang on, just oh, and it's expletive deleted. It's
ball.
Got the beach ball on the little Apple beach
spinning
ball.
Beach ball. Well, the new MacBook has basically follows the specs that people thought. I mean, it is crazy thin. It only has one port, which that almost well, I almost
we,
wondered
we should,
if that
we should,
was a joke.
I was
somewhat surprised.
That.
Yeah,
it,
that
it has
we
like
talk
the
about that.
USB 3.1 Type C port. Which
I don't think it's 3.1. I think
it's
3.0.
Yeah.
Oh well,
it's USB Type C.
You know, you might want to tell Ars Technica.
Oh, did we say that?
Oh wait,
did
no, they're
say
saying
that?
USB 3.1 and Type C, the only stuff at CES that everyone's going to use.
Yeah. No,
so
that's
to
different.
Another article.
I was going to say, I have to call Andrew up and beat him through the phone.
But Type C, which is the one that, see, current USB takes 3 attempts to plug in.
I was hoping
Type-C
that you would say that.
Type C will only take 2.
USB, like, USB is this magical port that is 3-sided. The first direction you plug it in is wrong. The second direction you plug it in is wrong, and then the third time
it exists
you try
in
it is
all
correct.
Three states.
It does, yeah.
Or in both states simultaneously.
Where now the new one should only take 2 attempts
correct.
To plug in.
Because it's symmetric.
Supposedly it should just take 1. Although, I guess the other thing I found that on my Nexus is plugging in the little mini USB.
That one's easy to shove in the wrong way and just break it.
It's got the case, like, sticks out so that you think that you're plugging it in, and it's really, like, against the case and bumping up on the edge of the port so that you're pushing on it, and the resistance, you think, oh, well, it's because I'm putting it in the wrong direction. No, it's because the case is...
maybe you should get an iPhone.
Defective. You mean an iPad. It's a Nexus 7. It's the...
Maybe you should get an iPad.
It's the tablet I got because the iPad mini with Retina display, they took their sweet time coming out with, and I could get a
But it's out now.
Yeah, it's been out for a while, but I had that Nexus 7, and it, you know, I use stuff until it needs to, until there's a, like, real compelling reason to replace it.
Just buy stuff.
There you go.
So the USB, the Type-C, is actually not an Apple thing. It's universal.
Yes.
Right. And it's bidirectional charging. So this actually means this is the first time, as far as I know, that Apple will ever have a non-proprietary charging adapter.
I'm going to miss MagSafe,
if you think of it like
though.
That. I'm
I
sure
like
they'll
MagSafe.
Do something, but surely they'll come out all standard, because I think it's like 20 volt, 5 amp max. I mean,
well,
it's all,
adapter,
they're all pretty standard.
The
yeah.
adapter for the new MacBook looks like it's sort of a slightly larger iPad. If you've got an iPad, especially the more recent ones, it's got a like wall wart, a big plug with a USB port on it that then plugs into your device. And the new MacBook has basically the same kind of thing.
It's a 25 or a 29 watt charger. It's on the Apple Store. You can go look at it now. Although it looks like they may have stock art up for it, because it looks just like on the Apple Store page anyway. It looks just like the MacBook Air
and on
charger.
The big cash in thing. If you want to do anything except plug it in to charge or run it while not charging and plug something else into the one port, unless you want to do that, you have to buy adapters.
Those adapters, by the way, look like they start at about $80.
And so, really, I thought there were some that were more like 30. But
well, there's a three-way breakout that you can plug in. It's USB Type-C on one end and then USB Type-A and HDMI and... something else. There's a lightning plug, and it's yeah. that's like the $80 one that you can start with.
So the pricing, and the pricing is, it starts at about $1,300. That's a 4 gigs of RAM.
It's 8 end to end, but it's soldered and non-upgradable, so okay. It will be 8 gigs of RAM forever.
But at least they're not doing the where it could be 8 and they give you 4 to start.
No,
like
fortunately,
they
realize that for current versions of OS X,
your choices on it are the size of the drive, which is 128 gig or 256, mm-hmm. and then you can also, I think, go up to
they have two CPU options.
Yeah,
they have the entry level is 1.1 gigahertz. It's 1.1 gigahertz Broadwell Core M, so it's a low power. Low TDP. I think it's got like it was ludicrously small. It was like 5 watt TDP or something. Yeah. They have I think they go from a 1.1 to a 1.3. And I haven't looked it up on Arc. I don't know if it's a multi-core chip or not. Arc is Intel's website where you can look up all their different processor parts with huge amounts of detail. But I do know that it has the same type of turbo boost bucket technology that the i3, i5, and i7s do, and it boosts up to 2.9 gigahertz or whatever. So I mean it's not as powerful as the processors in the MacBook Air. They are not Core i5 and Core i7s, but they are Broadwell, and they're certainly enough in the hands-on demos that I saw that my guys did at the event. They said that the GPU, and it's because it's got an integrated Intel GPU, just like all the Broadwell parts do, had no problem pushing the interface. They said everything was lag-free. It wasn't like that was, you know, like some kind of, you know, super slow budget processor. It was an Apple-like experience, and it looked great in Retina. So
It's basically not the first MacBook Air.
It's kind of like that.
It's not the crappier version that they'll probably have to make a better version of in a year or two.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean,
I would say the second gen of this is going to very likely be a real monster.
Well, that's often the case with stuff that Apple does. Like the first one, you know, after it's been out for a little while, you start to realize that, you know, maybe this isn't as great as that. And then they make good on the second generation. They've done that with a ton of their different
Although apparently parts. The Retina display, at least from the people I've read who've seen it in person, said that once you've looked at that and used it, that it's very hard to go back to a regular, MacBook Air.
Oh yeah, well, because the MacBook Air display, this is just a little TN panel. It's not a very good panel.
And the whole motherboard on it is really small. It's like the size of an iPhone or something almost.
Yeah, because the thing's of it's all battery.
And they used a new tech with the battery for them to do tiered batteries shape. So it's like it's not just a block. It's not a rectangular block. It's actually tiered battery shaping. So they actually milled out the aluminum case. So it's like rice paddy tiers or something.
They had
like
some fancy name for it.
Yeah.
Although, you know, if they stay on this track, I can see the Apple keynote where they get so down into the just technology of making the thing that they never really talk about what the product means to the person. Because they showed a lot of that. I mean, they showed the inside of the case, which, you know, technically, I guess, yeah, it was probably as interesting as whenever anybody cracked an iPad.
I always like those pictures, but you know, I'm funny that way.
You know, when they cracked the old the Mac Plus or whatever, where it had the signatures of all the people who were on the team.
Oh, that was the original one.
Yeah, the original one.
original Mac.
I was excited at first for Barrett because, you know, it's got LED backlit and there's an LED for each button, so it's uniformly backlit. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is what Barrett's been waiting for. He can one up all of us.
And then
with
I saw
his
the
backlit
specs.
Keyboard, and then and then the processor turned out to be.
I was very excited for just a little while, and then I was like,
for the MacBook.
Yeah, I need a refresh.
They also
did refresh the MacBook. I mean, they refreshed the MacBook
the
Air but what I want is that with the Retina and stuff that just doesn't exist right now.
Unless you just basically you just need to get a MacBook Pro with a Retina display.
And yeah, but I want that in this form. I want this thin. Which I think that's where they're going. I want
there.
Something about 3 years that's
Before you order one, I
just
would
buy
say
some more motorcycles, Barrett.
Yeah.
Or parts of motorcycles and just scatter them around.
You know, Apple and motorcycles have a long history. Steve Jobs used to keep a BMW motorcycle at the old Bandley headquarters, at the old Bandley building, because it was an example of beautiful art produced elsewhere in the world that he used to inspire him. So you should just go buy a big BMW motorcycle so that you
and
can
be inspired.
Like, inspired.
I'm inspired not to buy an Apple Watch.
Well, before you, if you're interested in the MacBook, before you rush out and buy one, I would say from reading some of the reviews, they changed how the keys work.
Oh,
I heard it's a lot better. It feels
most
good.
Some people have had, I've seen some people have had real positive response, and some people
they said,
well, they've changed
it's
the
like
way
a,
the trackpad
like
works too. So like
yeah,
a
force,
I don't like
force
the name
touch.
Though. Yeah, it's called force pad, right?
Feedback.
Force click.
Yes.
You must click.
The
buttons
the
they said they call butterfly instead
butterfly
of scissors.
Yeah, new gestures, right?
Does the force pad kind of say no?
No.
Yeah.
No. But it really
please
means
don't.
Yes.
No means yes.
When you push on it, it goes no.
And it's not haptic feedback. It's taptic feedback.
Taptic.
Because you can trademark that.
Captain Fantaptic.
But craptic is still available.
Yes.
Anyone actually tried the new trackpad? Have you?
No,
anyone?
No. My guys that we sent to the event tried it out. They said it was interesting, but you know.
And the rumors are that it's going to spread. That is something that this is a view of ahead on what Apple's going to do, and that the taptic type force thing was going to get to. It sounded like iPhones.
As long as I can still
be glassy,
two
right?
finger scroll, I'm good. Yeah, the Surface is still glass.
Okay.
So
well, if they make the Power Mac vibrate, that could get interesting.
I think the big change is that. On most, if you've used a Apple touchpad, you can still tell there's the mechanical click.
Right, and
you can
does
feel
not
it.
Have
where
that.
This does not have that rock or that piece where there's only one, you know, because if you've ever pushed in the wrong place, it doesn't
yeah,
click.
Yeah, up at the top, it does not. It's sort of like
you
but
can't,
not really.
But you've really got to muscle it.
Especially
and then the
when
part
you
clicks,
when
yeah.
you help somebody who's. Usually of the older persuasion who turns off the gesture stuff, who doesn't like tap for click on their MacBook or whatever, which I
how
do
you use your
those.
Computer without tap to click?
Oh, and so the right click, you know, I like the two finger tap
how
for right click.
How do you live without
and you have
that?
To go down and do the actual physically tap on the like lower right hand side of the tablet.
There's no, still no touchscreen, right? They're keeping that up. Because as soon as they introduce that, they're going to cannibalize. I think they won't do it because they're going to cannibalize iPads.
I think they're trying to wait
well, they won't
until
they have to.
Until Mac OS has a better like has some kind of way to integrate it. Yeah. But yeah. But still, you know what? I mean, my dad, whom I love very much, who might be listening to this program.
Hi, Dad.
Uses, you know, he's got an iPad that he uses to death, and he has a desktop iMac, but he doesn't use an Apple Portable. And every time I've got my MacBook anywhere near him and I'm like, hey, look at this, Dad, I want to show you this, he goes right for the screen. And it's like, no, you can't do that. I mean, I know you could if you had a Windows laptop or just about a laptop.
Dad, I bought you a greasy hoagie and I want to show you my new laptop. Let's go.
Wait, but here's the question I have in that situation. It's like you go to show somebody something on your MacBook Air or your laptop of any kind, whatever it is, and you're showing, you've already got it dialed into what you want them to see. Why are they trying to scroll?
Well, you know, maybe it's like a funny picture and you have to scroll down for the funny part. You know?
They just want to.
Whatever you're showing
your
me
screen.
Doesn't interest me.
Swipe left.
We are not immune.
Swipe left.
So, let's see. So, we talked about the port. We got into the force
pad. It's
like
the longest info shot ever.
Well, we pretty much moved right into the...
we spent 30 minutes of Apple Watch time on the Apple Watch.
We were watching it.
You know, I was timing it with the Apple Watch and also showed my heart rate.
Much like Saturday night, we lost an hour.
Let's see.
That's a whole other... speaking of the time conversation, we should maybe touch on that next hour.
It's about that time.
It is about that time. We're coming up close to having to do our station break. But
seems like there's more grumbling about trying to get rid of daylight savings time this year around.
Oh, man, please. Let's get rid of it.
I was going to say...
pitch it out the window.
It is the cause du jour of the social media sphere. Daylight savings time is coming under attack from everywhere.
Thanks, Obama. I mean, thanks, Bush.
Oops. Yeah, thanks, Kaiser Wilhelm.
Bush was the one that moved it, although,
that's right,
yeah. It's
back
been,
in 2005.
Yeah, it's been monkeyed around with a little bit, and it's the point where you've got electronic clocks in early cars that had that were not yet aware of the whole
people
Bush.
People who want to mess with DST are invoking the wrath of Y2K.
Well, especially
all
since
over again.
They shortened the part where you get the better sleep is the thing that I hate.
I don't understand why people... I mean, you know, I guess the if you live in a northerner latitude, it makes more of a difference. But down here, I'd rather do standard time year-round and just be done with it.
Right. Well, the politician answer is by moving daylight savings time like they did, that then there would be more time for people to shop and that it would boost the economy.
Well, and farm. Oh. You know, I get up a lot earlier to milk the cows and
yeah,
feed
the
chickens.
Yeah, when the time changes, the cows do the extra hour.
Did you see John
that
Oliver's bit on that?
No.
Yeah, it was nice.
Cows are stupid.
All right, let's go to break so we can watch John Oliver.
All right. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse will be back after this station business.
Saturday, March 21st, the 2015 Sounds of Texas Music Series kicks off with a double bill featuring Kelly Willis and Bruce Robison, plus singer-songwriter John Fulbright. Bruce Robison is one of country and Americana music's most respected songwriters, with compositions that have been covered by George Strait, Tim McGraw, and the Dixie Chicks. He'll be joined on stage by his wife, popular songwriter Kelly Willis. Both are well-known as solo artists, and Kelly and Bruce recently collaborated on a pair of critically acclaimed albums together, Cheater's Game and Our Year. Rising star and Grammy nominee John Fulbright will open the show with his own complete set. For tickets, call 936-441-7469, extension 201, and visit soundsoftexasmusicseries.com for more details. Don't miss Kelly Willis, Bruce Robison, and John Fulbright March 21st at the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a Montgomery County nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
Thank you. Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Technology Bites. Woo-hoo, we're watching funny videos that we can't play on the air.
Cows don't care.
Cows are idiots. We were having the daylight saving time. So, how, you know, I mean, it seemed like, who was it mentioning? It seems like it's been very much the discussion in social media.
Seems like Twitter gets louder about
everything.
Has it
been a slow week to, you know, people not find anything else to complain about, or is this a legitimate source of concern suddenly for people?
I think it's things that we take for granted. You know, this is something that happens, and it's now a new opportunity to kind of set Twitter on fire with our gripes.
I think the other piece to it is everybody can be on the same side for that one, because nobody's like, no, we have to keep, you know, there's not going to be like a big pushback. There's tons of people who are like that. I would say the majority opinion is that
DST should be made permanent. That by far the vast number of people on my feed.
When you say permanent, you mean totally go off it.
No, go on it and never come.
Yeah, but just have one single time.
Have one time, no change, but just have that permanent time.
No, I think
the
internet needs this healing. I think after your red dress, white dress, I think we need something that everyone can get together on
and
agree about.
Everyone pretty much has. Well, this one is kind of like
they're just agreeing it's a dress, you know. Whether they're all saying it should stay the old time prior to daylight savings time or be the new one
saving
permanently.
Saving time, that's the new thing, is they're like correct people when they say daylight savings time.
It's actually daylight savings time.
It's the new grammar Nazi. It's the new, you know, asterisk your daylight saving time.
What about going to UTC? What do you guys think about that?
That's kind of a proposal that would appeal to someone who uses Android.
We finally, at least on our servers, just for logging and stuff, for a handful of years now, we've been on pure UTC.
For all you geeks, I'm still having trouble getting onto UTF-8.
Why don't we just switch to metric time like in The Simpsons? Because that's what you're talking about.
I will say that the people I met in Greenwich are some of the happiest people I've ever met in my life.
That's because they don't like daylight savings time.
No,
they just
because mean time
line,
is a misnomer.
Right?
Oh, it's happy time. See what you did there.
All right, so...
No, wait a minute. I don't get it.
Explain it.
Explain, Jay.
At length.
Jay Splain. All right, so what's next? So what, we have no Barrett time, although Barrett has promised us week after week that he's going to
do... No, but Peter was here this time, and then the Apple Watch. So, yeah,
it just wasn't appropriate, and it was rainy, and the sun was in his eyes.
It's raining, and he's on his motorcycle.
It was locust. You have to believe me.
I do have a few Tri-Buyer fries, and they are not watches.
Is one of them the Apple Watch?
Or single port?
Is it the
laptops.
Apple Watch?
No, no. There's one that's actually kind of, you know, for all the with tablets and stuff. There, you know, a couple weeks ago, there was the Microsoft one that folded in, that revolutionarily folded in half the Bluetooth keyboard. I actually saw one that really is unique, where it's, I'll show Barrett because
you
can
say
see the picture.
It's magical.
It's a Bluetooth. It fits. It's in three pieces.
It looks like someone took a handful of iPod Nanos and made a keyboard out of them in the shape of a flying V.
So it all fits.
like a Gibson flying V?
You can put them together or not. Basically, it's in three pieces. It's got a space bar piece, and then it's got two, you know, like the ergonomic keyboard thing. It's got the QWERTY keyboard divided in half. You can...
You could just rotate your laptop for us to see it, or you could continue to describe it. We can pretend like we're on the radio. Huh.
There's that.
And that's weird.
But it's got a full QWERTY keyboard, and when you touch them, they actually have a click like a regular keyboard.
Is there a name to it?
It's called the
keyboard.
The picture's farther in. No, the company's called Waytools, and it's called the Text Blade.
I like it.
Or you could go to geekradio.com, and I have links on the first post for all of the articles and things that we've talked about on the show tonight.
I like it.
So you can follow along or get ahead, or you can read the stuff that we don't get to.
Or you can see just how far off script we go.
You know, the thing is, it fits in a very, you know, fits in a very small package because each piece is the same size, and so
that's
you put
very
them all together,
cool. Actually, it looks like a USB stick. About the size it goes down to, right?
Oh, I thought you were looking at like magazines and a gun sight
that's
or something.
Four of them. That's four of them in a little bitty like organizer tray.
Most people wouldn't know what it is to steal it from you. They'd be like, "What the heck is this? Some pack of gum?" Or
no, it's my magical USB keyboard.
And so this one, this was actually kind of a clever and different design. They kind of deconstructed the keyboard and came up with the best way to have it. It's about the third of the size of an iPhone when you've got it all apart, and it weighs 1.5 ounces. They figured they followed the 80-20 rule, which is 80% of the time on like an iOS device, you don't need the keyboard. You don't need an external keyboard, but 20% of the time, it works all the time. the Sex Panther Bluetooth.
What was that thing called again? Not Sex Panther.
Text Blade.
Woof.
Text Blade.
Yeah,
I'm
waiting for them to come out with the Switch Text Blades.
I want the Text Blade Runner.
I'll text a bitch.
Can you say that on the radio?
He just did.
I'm sure that...
Would you stop doing fan service to our prison listeners? For anyone that knows that, I'm looking at the internals of this keyboard, and it looks suspiciously like the C-Duino film, down to the color, the specs, and the whole thing. C-Duino film was like a super, super thin, bendable PCB that you could get, and it was short-lived, but this looks like
Maybe they bought it up in bulk.
Yeah, or I'm sure it was the technology that kind of came out, so now you can get it in that form factor, but it's ultra, ultra thin circuit board, and I guess that's how they're going to get that small and thin.
Basically, there's four components to it: a stand that holds an iPhone or an iPad, two blades that have 8 keys combined. So it's 4 keys, but each key is divided into sort of thirds on it, how it's marked vertically.
Uh-huh.
And so you touch the top part and it's Q. You know, the middle is A and the bottom is Z on that sort of left-hand one. And then they have some, obviously they have the kind of, you know, it doesn't have as many keys as a regular keyboard, so there are modifiers to do special characters and numbers and stuff. So there's the two bars with the keys and a space bar that houses the battery and 10 LEDs for notifications. Each of the 8 keys supports several different features. Waytools refers to it as multi-layering. I would definitely put... Oh, for example, one of the keys houses the W, the S, and the X. But with a combination of button presses, you can access numbers and symbols like to and at all from the same key.
All right.
And all that. I would definitely put this under try. I would want to see it in
person. I would try this out. I would totally try this.
And let's see. Did they say what...
Question is, could you type fast on it?
And also how much...
It has all the keys, F-A-S and T.
They said that most people... they said that most people, there's a little bit of time to get used to it, but that it's...
Oh, wow. Yeah, look at that. We're watching the YouTube video of it right now.
It's pretty quick.
So if
you want
to follow along at home, what is it? Where can they go see a
it's
video?
It's right on the
right on our
right
page.
On the front page. You can under
go
the...
Go to geekradio.com if you want to
check
it out.
It's the first post. I posted all the links at the beginning of the show. And we're going to try to do that going forward. So then if you want to participate, you can, like, read along.
The question is, does their demo video have a person with normal hands, or does that person secretly have teeny tiny hands?
Little doll hands. But, yeah, it's about $100. So I would say that's probably, that would be a definite, I think that would be a try.
Yeah. Yes, sir, I like it.
And then next one, this one's gotten pretty hot and... But we haven't talked about it on the show, I don't believe. Meerkat.
Okay, wow. I have not installed Meerkat, and I have not signed up for Meerkat. And you know why I haven't signed up for Meerkat? Because Meerkat requires you to enable your Twitter account to do Twitter authorization with it. And when you go and, like, sign up for it and like link in your Twitter account, it shows the list of permissions that this service requests, and listed in there is like, see who follows you, tweet for
everything.
You, add followers for you. There's like the whole, it's basically
it's
every,
catch up all over
it's
again.
It's basically everything. And so, yeah, I'm not going to.
I thought I would just jump out there without
so,
before
you
save me the
so
trouble.
So you already got
not
an account,
do
Jay?
But,
what?
You already, so you already got an account?
No.
But they say it's
if you did, you'd already have an invite.
I got an invite.
I know it if I did.
No, you can just go sign up for Meerkat. I know, like, every single, like, I'm part of, like, this weird tech journalist Twitter cabal. So, like, my Twitter feed is basically other tech journalists, and really, we don't even, like, tweet news. We tweet at each other all day long, like, this massive series of inside jokes. And I've been being left out over the past week or so because everybody's been using Meerkat. And they're like, join my Meerkat stream and watch me Meerkat. And like, well, I don't want a stupid Meerkat Twitter authorization token.
Is it like Vine, or is it the new, is it like Quick? Or I saw Dwight Silverman posted something. He's got it installed.
Oh, well, if Dwight's got it, then it's not cool anymore.
It says, the description I found is, you know, streaming videos obviously been around for years. The problem's been finding people to watch what you stream, you know, live. Meerkat solves it by instantly sharing whatever you're filming with all of your Twitter followers at once.
What could possibly go wrong?
It's a problem-free philosophy.
followers that have the app will also be notified when you start a new stream and can watch, comment, and interact all in real time. In keeping with the instant theme of the app, you can't rewatch streams. They're live only.
I bet
so
you get
that whole
kind of
Snapchat
though.
Thing going on.
And it's called Meerkat because it's like you poke your head up like a meerkat and like look around.
And while you can save your own streams to your phone, the company doesn't keep any copies either. This summary, though, did not mention the thing where you just, like, the only cost is all of your privacy. And
yeah, pretty much. It's Twitter. Free for certain values of free.
Brought to you by the NSA.
So, I don't know. I'm guessing that puts this towards the Fry end of the pool for most of us.
I was disappointed. I liked Quick. Quick was a live streaming app you could put on your phone, and it got bought by whoever bought it.
Didn't teenagers use that to sext each other?
Dwight used it to record show clips.
I did. I used it like when I was traveling, like to show, like when there was a protest in Prague or something like that. Just do live streaming of whatever's going on at the time. But what's the popular video conferencing software?
Skype.
Skype. I think they bought Quick and kind of quashed it.
Destroyed.
Which is Microsoft owns Skype.
Right.
So
yeah. Have destroyed
that
it.
That may be why it's disappeared.
But mostly, the idea of doing streaming video, or, you know, like the whole Vine thing caught on pretty good because people could do a little Vine and it connected to your Twitter account.
Yeah.
And it would send it out.
Well,
that
this
way.
Would be, I guess, however long it was. So if you're at, you know, well, to take something that happened this week, if you're in Paris and you're at the Valentino show, and the and Hansel and
Derek Zoolander
walk out on the catwalk for the first time in how many years?
You
because
want to
of
see
Zoolander
him do
too.
Blue Steel.
If you do Meerkat, then obviously all of your followers immediately and instantly. It's kind of like the llama thing,
right?
I think is what they're trying to get to. But
when at?
Does it whip the llama?
But so that you could live stream it and have that go.
It snaps
in
the
real
llama's
time.
Chat.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
But although most of the time I've found that it's like, you know, FaceTime also works with your phone, but obviously it doesn't go to all your followers. But if there's one person you want to share whatever's going on.
I hate all this technology. Let's all go live in caves.
And, okay, finally, this one's an interesting sort of makery one. I don't know if you – have you heard of Bondic, B-O-N-D-I-C? Yeah, yeah.
We might have to wait until later in the show.
It's kind of like 50 Shades of Clay, I think. It holds stuff together.
Is this something about 007?
No. No, it's called Bondic Liquid Plastic Welder. And what it is unlike like crazy glue, this stuff, you apply liquid plastic to the area you're wanting to fix or bond, and then it's got a UV light, an LED-based UV light that you shine on the plastic.
Can I put this on my Mustang? Is this like Bondo?
And it hardens it.
Can I put it on my...
It also lets you build up layers,
Mustang?
So you can put this plastic down. You can lay it down in layers to fill a space.
Barrett, you need to get some of this. And
well, then you can sand
I've super glued my fingers together all too many times to where this is actually attractive. So it looks
like
an epoxy.
Unlike regular glue, it won't leave your fingers stuck
together. They're calling it a non-glue. It looks like probably an epoxy that either vulcanizes or sets up under UV light.
So it's like
pretty
an
EPROM, smart.
But glue.
Yeah.
And so you can build it up. I mean, the thing, I would want to know how strong it is because there's some stuff I would like to some car type trim stuff that I would like to fix on a car.
Could you glue your fingers together if you had UV light?
Yes, you could. Yes,
okay,
you could.
Okay.
And only for a second. So all it really does is it totally weeds out the pure accidental and it just puts it in the shade of not quite paying attention. So that's nice, you know.
Nice.
So
you had to buy some and bring it to the next geek.
It's about 25.
We'll
it's about 25 bucks
together.
For it. So or you can
Wonder Powers Unite.
Or you can just wait for somebody to set their plastic device down on top of a plastic table and then you know, build up some
this
layers.
This is here. I'm really curious as to see what this actually does because the light that they're showing looks like the exact same. Like if you were to go through Micro Center or Fry's and be in line and
well,
you saw this
little
cheap.
Squeezy keychain light.
Yeah, squeezy LED keychain light that's probably putting out like 890 nanometer. You know, UV light. It doesn't look like it's. I thought maybe it'd be like a little, you know, super powered gun where you can, you know, get a tan, you know, on, you know, draw sunburn on a really, really pasty person.
So would sunlight be enough to make this stuff?
I bet it's got to be UV. It's probably got to be UV. It's probably the wavelength that's doing it.
But
it's still
UV
odd.
And
so otherwise,
sunlight.
It would. The second you took it out, it would harden up. Well, ooh, so you have to go into the dark room?
Maybe
the glue room.
The glue
what
room.
If you what if you wear what if you wear blue blockers?
Jay, the glue room is a room at Jay's house.
Hey now.
50 Shades of Glue.
50 Shades of Jay.
Ooh.
Will you be sticking around?
Just think of how much fun you could have in that booth if we had a soundboard with all kinds of little things that you could play.
We've got Groove House.
He's not doing anything. What good is he? He isn't making sound effects with his mouth or anything.
I do cuckoo, and that's about it.
I do cuckoo.
We need to install the Groove House expansion and make him do more stuff.
I need an upgrade.
Well, you know, it's like it's an in-game upgrade, right?
You got to pay for that.
You need to purchase, yeah.
This is pay to win. What do
we used
win?
To do more of that. The toughest part is getting something wired into the board that
that
would do
but
it.
But Flicked just said we've no, got it's all computerized.
Groovehouse used to do it on his phone.
Yeah.
He used to be much more on the ball and play these sounds on his phone. It was quite fun.
That sounds like high technology.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Groovehouse is just waiting for the phone that will never ring.
I'll never answer
back
it.
In the earlier, even more amateur days of the show, though.
Even more amateur,
well,
if
when,
you could
when laptops, when laptops were thicker, which meant they had like bigger speakers, so you could actually really hold the microphone down by the speaker and play it, and it sounded pretty decent.
We did that a couple of weeks ago with the Llama and the Winamp sound clip.
We still do it.
True, but it was better with some of these, you know, when it was a 5-pound laptop and it had a stereo cabinet
subwoofer.
In it for the sound. But yeah, you could do Austin Powers sound bites or Duke Nukem or whatever else we did then.
Duke Nukem on the radio. That's awesome. I like that.
You're ugly. Among the like three safe yeah, right. sounds you can play.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some quotes that I can drop, and I'm nope. Shake it,
so,
baby.
Well, had we
just in along the lines of that? There's also something that I just found. It's called Fiber Fix. So it's like duct tape, but you get it wet, and when it dries, it is close to the strength of steel. It's 100 times stronger than duct tape. When it dries, which is pretty awesome. Because, I mean, that's permanent. That's permanently, you could permanently put someone somewhere.
Could you stick your fingers together with that?
Yeah, I'm sure you could. You
could
actually get in a situation you
can't get out
of.
You could build, like, the ultimate three-legged race team with
this. I use that to seal up the glue room.
Fiberfix.com. That's kind of cool.
See, this new stuff.
The Cask of Amontillado.
For the love of God, Jay!
It's like every movie now has to explain, you know, once the cell phone became ubiquitous and the smartphone, now they always have to have the darn my phone has run out of battery so that they can be, you know, isolated in the haunted mansion or whatever the deal is.
The glue room.
Or not just call the cops and end the whole story, you know, in the first 5 minutes.
I'm at Jay Lee's house.
Now imagine.
I'm in the glue room.
You can't even have MacGyver, because if you've got, like, Fiberfix and Bondic, you're pretty much could make, you know, well, we need a boat. Okay.
Done.
Give me some UV and boom, you're off in the boat, you know, but.
There are a lot of cool, like, as far as the maker stuff goes, because if you need, you know, to, like, fabricate something small, like a little button or glue two things together, you're kind of stuck. But there are some things like this. And there's also something, have you seen Suguru?
Yes.
It's been out for about a year.
What's it called?
It's called S-U-G-R-U. I think you pronounce it like Suguru.
Okay.
And what it is like, it kind of feels like Play-Doh, a cross between Play-Doh and Silly Putty. And then what it does is it vulcanizes or hardens up in air.
Lives long and prospers?
Yeah, it lives long and prospers. Actually, this sadly, yes, did outlive some things. But you can, like, you know, modeling clay, whatever you want to, you know, like, make a new Yuoki, do whatever you want to, and then within about, you know, 6-8 hours in air, it cures up really, really hard.
Wait a minute, did you say make it into Gnocchi?
Yeah,
just missed that. I was reading the Suguru website.
Into an Oki.
I thought you said you could make Gnocchi out of it.
You could make Gnocchi into it. I would just eat it quickly before it sets up. Yeah.
So it sets up inside you.
No, I will. Don't hang on to it too long, because the pouches do not seem to be completely airproof, or that vulcanizing process is just slowed down by the absence of oxygen. Because I held on to some for too long, and there is an expiration date on there for a reason. I got out there and tried to mold it, and all I had was a Suguru-shaped piece
package
of Suguru.
Shaped thing.
Yeah.
That's one of those life hacker. There's about 200 articles about various things you can make using that to be, you know.
It's the same thing as if you were, like, to get some clay in a kiln and, you know, go through all these steps.
If people wanted to look it up, how do you spell it again?
S-U-G-R-U.
Suguru.
Suguru? It's like sugar if you're Japanese, right?
Sugaru.
Hey, you might get kicked off top speed for that. Careful.
Top gear. No, he got kicked off because he punched somebody over the catering table.
So there was a lot of other stuff.
Jeremy Clarkson.
The producer,
been,
I believe.
Jeremy Clarkson has been temporarily suspended from Top Gear, the BBC show. If you want to go way far off here just for a second. Allegedly, the BBC said, for punching one of the show's producers when they had failed to provide a catering table for the hosts after a long day's work. So, apparently,
no spoiled pampered diva Jeremy Clarkson.
Well, that's kind of his role on the show. Clarkson is to be the jerk, you know.
Well, they're not going to air it this week because of that.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I love Top Gear. Is like my official, like, show to watch when I'm on a plane, because it always seems like it's in the rotation, mm-hmm. and it's always some episode I haven't seen, and it's always like I could watch like one or two of these and then we're there.
Well,
and
there
it's
are
great.
A billion episodes, so
yeah.
You're going to
yeah.
see one you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Are you likely to be eaten by a Suguru?
I hope not. Don't turn out the lights.
Only in the mountains.
Only if you're in the dark. Don't go north.
I see what you're doing there. It is very dark. You're likely to be eaten by a Suguru.
A Subaru.
No, that's if you're in the mountains and you're driving fast.
It's a if you're not familiar with a Gru, you can Google Gru. Or actually, MC Frontalot has a cool song called
You Are Likely to Be Eaten by a Gru. It's a reference to Zork, old Infocom text game that probably some of our listeners have played. Probably most of our listeners have played.
All right. When the story first came out about Jeremy Clarkson, it was just said, there was no details, it just said that he got into a fracas,
mm-hmm. fracas.
Yes.
With the producer.
Yes.
And there was a great infographic came out that said, how does a fracas rate against other types of disturbances? At the low end, it starts disagreement, quarrel, commotion, clash, tussle, fracas, brawl, fight, murder.
Where does kerfuffle go on that spectrum?
That's just slang.
Somewhere between a quarrel and
I'm
a fight,
that's pretty,
probably.
Pretty,
yeah.
I think that's pretty low.
Yeah. A kerfuffle's probably
it's right down
pretty
there
low.
With dust up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. No, I mean, Top Gear is the soundtrack of my house. Because my wife loves Top Gear.
Really?
So it.
Well, good. 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 So good for your wife.
Do you have a stick outfit?
Huh?
Do you have a stick outfit?
That's what he dresses up like.
For the glue room?
For the glue room. Some say.
No, but between
He has no hair on his body.
BBC America plays it nonstop, practically, you know. And if it's not there, she's watching it on Netflix.
All we know is he's called the J.
So one of the funniest things I've ever seen was their special on the Vietnam special with the Vespa and the motorcycle and the Russian motorcycle.
That was when we found it.
Some of those races, I will say, they are very clever on coming up with the different competitions.
The challenges.
It's the kind of things that most people, you might have a conversation and say, oh, you know, this car, I'm sure this car could accelerate faster than a fighter jet, but nobody ever can go out and actually test it, and they go and do it.
Yeah.
What I think I find most astonishing about the program is the quality of the camera work.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's iconic at this point.
For it all being remotes, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just all over the place.
They set the cameras up along the roads and stuff, but they have, like, strategically placed centipedes and scorpions or snakes or butterflies.
Yeah, it's iconic. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is say, I want to shoot this Top Gear style, and if it involves cars, you know immediately in your head exactly what style you're talking about.
Speaking of it, there were a lot of console games, and I got to look at, I think it was Forza 2 or Forza 5 or Forza something. It's like one
Forza.
Of the new... Is it Forza? Because it's Italian. Italiano. Ah, okay, Italiano. So Forza. Is it just, is it 1Z or 2Zs?
It's 1Z.
Okay.
It's Forza.
Okay. So I've got to look at that, and the cool thing with that is the roads and the cities on that actually map up to real roads and cities to the point where I went and drove through a city on that I'd been to before, and it looks like someone's almost like gone through and taken a Google Maps thing and rendered it almost exactly down to the storefronts, the signs. Now, some ugly things like the dry cleaner is now a coffee shop and some things like that, but I was really impressed to where you can almost like go and train on that and then go drive those roads.
I'm ready.
I'm ready
to be dropped off in a BMW in the Nürburgring.
I'm going to Sisteron.
I'm going to crush the Nürburgring. If I ever go there, I'm either going to like destroy some kind of record or destroy BMW, one of the two. But I'm like all set, man. I've been doing that for years.
Along those lines, I have to say that Assassin's Creed, whichever...
Are you playing the newest one?
No.
Or which one? Black Sails?
Version that was set in Italy... They have a scene set in Florence, and you can go, but it's, you know, obviously it's medieval Florence, but I had been to Florence, and it was amazing how that whole thing kind of mapped out, and, you know, the Duomo was there, the storefront was there, the market was there.
Did you climb up on a rooftop and stab somebody?
That explains why Jay had to be rescued from halfway up the Duomo.
Help! I can't walk down.
I can't parkour any farther up here.
No,
that's one of those things that I'd always kind of discounted Assassin's Creed. I was familiar with it. I knew about the whole Assassin's Creed joke. You know, I was clued in, but I didn't realize... we'll get to that in a second. But the thing that I really liked about this game is it actually takes you back. It goes to periods of time with the costume, with the architecture, with the hustle and bustle and the feel of these cities. And that's really cool. Like, I want to see that make its way into, like, schools to where instead of, you know, studying about the Renaissance, you can go walk around the Renaissance.
And murder
without people. Without having to go sneak up behind someone, you know, murderize them and tiptoe
off.
So
in school, instead of playing Oregon Trail and just reading about people.
Yes. I have many fond memories of breaking axles and dying of dysentery in school.
I think I'd rather get taken out by a ninja-like assassin jumping off this huge tower than die of dysentery. You know, call me crazy, but I'd rather go out like quick.
I'd like
than,
to
you know,
assassinate my
somewhere.
Way to an A.
I could have done so much better in school if only I could have Assassin's Creed-ed my way through it.
So the idea is there is, I guess I've never gotten to this part of the game, but there's a horse. The assassin has a horse, and if you blow the horse whistle, the horse shows up.
That's like in the second or third one.
Second or third game, but yeah, so they call it Assassin's Steed because the horse is a better assassin than most people. Because you don't know, you don't even see him until you blow the whistle. And there's the horse. Where does the horse hang out all that time before you blow the whistle?
Yeah, the one thing with Assassin's Creed is you can jump off the like highest place and... It seems to work.
It's pretty.
You can still get hurt.
I still can't do that.
You have to really,
yeah.
really
yeah.
screw up, though, because if there's anything nearby that you could
well, you
possibly
can, like, dive
yeah, yeah,
into,
yeah.
like,
instead,
hay baskets and stuff.
They're strategic. Like, when you go up for the viewpoints to get bearings on the city, you have to launch yourself off in a certain way to land in a hay bale or something. You can hurt yourself. But, yeah, as long as you kind of hug the wall.
I don't play these games.
Have you hurt yourself playing Assassin's Creed?
Only in the glue room.
Fell off the back of the couch while he was...
Well, he was wearing a Stig costume.
Yeah, I gotta wonder about it. that's, I haven't seen lots of capture stuff, but I would think Assassin's Creed was pretty impressive on like PS3, but I'm betting on
I got to see it on the new Xbox, and it looked really neat on like a huge 60 the X-Bone. Inch kind of, it was
well, that's, and that's what 4K screens are for, frankly, aren't, because won't both of those drive,
I don't know,
4K,
I've been playing my Oculus Rift, so I'm so far above all you console
now,
peasants.
Now, isn't Bjork, did we talk about this before, isn't Bjork coming out with a video and an experience just for the Rift?
I think she is.
That's yes. what I heard.
Which yeah, there was an article about it.
We talked about that, right?
I don't think we didn't get to it.
Okay.
Bjork.
It's going to have elfin magic.
Bjork.
Are you, so what's this? Well, we're going to be talking about video games, which is fine by me. What is the game that you're playing that's the multiplayer space captain?
Oh, I've been playing for months now in beta, Elite Dangerous, which is...
Is that Oculus Rift?
It does use the Rift. You don't have to have one, but they've designed it with
the Rift?
And I am playing it with the Rift, and it is an amazing experience of feeling like you're in a spaceship cockpit. The game is... The game's by David Braben. It's a game out of the UK, and it is Technology Bytes listeners who have been playing computer games for many, many years might recognize this. It is another game in the Elite series of games, which started in 1984 as one of the first space flight games for whatever system you had, Apple or Commodore. I played it on IBM PC in 87 or 88. Originally, it's a game where you have a spaceship and 100 credits, and you trade your way up to upgrades, and you get a blow up other ships and get a combat rating and blah blah blah. The new version, the one that you can buy now, Elite Dangerous, had a really successful Kickstarter and has been sort of in a semi-closed beta until December. It was released officially in December. You can go buy it now and play. I have a great time with it. I love playing it. I'm generally playing Elite at least, you know, once or twice.
What's the console that you hooked the Oculus Rift up to?
So if you've got the Oculus Rift is the head-mounted display. So currently, you can only buy the developer version of it. The release version hasn't yet come out. The developer version is a lower resolution model that's intended to be used by developers to like get games ready for when they eventually release this thing. Right now you hook it up to a PC and you'd have a computer to hook it up, and it uses it just uses HDMI or DisplayPort. So you just plug it into the back okay. of your video card directly, and then it's got a little camera that you set, a little infrared camera that goes on top of your monitor that shines at the Rift, which is a thing you put on your face, which has little invisible infrared LEDs on it. So the camera tracks your motion and position and translates it into the game. The reason why it works so well in in Elite Dangerous is because there's a really weird disconnect. If you've ever played, anybody here who's been to any kind of trade show or anything where they've had like a VR demo, the first thing that you think you want to do is, oh my gosh, I've got this VR thing on my face. I want to play like a first-person game. I want to try out like Call of Duty or something where like you can see this game that you've played, but you want to see it in 3D now that you've got the thing on. But games that are like traditional first-person games, like Half-Life or Call of Duty or whatever, games where you know it's first-person FPS, don't really mesh all that well with a head-mounted display, because there is a disparity between what you see on your screen and what you're doing in real life with your body. So you know, usually, if you're playing on a console, you've got a gamepad with your thumbs. If you're playing on a computer, usually you're using mouse and keyboard. And like, if you're on a computer and you swing your mouse to the left to look left and the viewport shifts to the left, on your screen that's not a problem. But when all of a sudden you've got this head-mounted display and all you can see is the display and it's in 3D and your viewpoint whips to the left really quickly because you moved your mouse, it doesn't bother some people. But the majority of people, it's like this recipe for very quick, very almost instant nausea. So... The reason why it works so well with Elite is because in the game you play, you know, it's not really a first person game. You're in a spaceship in a cockpit, sitting in a chair with your flight sticks in front of you and looking out through the window. And in real life, you are more than likely also sitting in your chair with your joysticks or whatever on your desk, looking straight out. And when you move your head around with the head-mounted display on in the cockpit, your guy moves his head around and you look around and it matches one-to-one with what you're doing in real life. And so it avoids, even though you can be like, you know, yanking the stick around and flying upside down and doing loops or whatever, it avoids that body disconnection, that proprioception break, and instead makes for a really immersive experience. So that was kind of my digression on Oculus, but it's a great game, Elite Dangerous. I think it's elitedangerous.com. If you've got, they're going to be releasing it on Xbox too in a couple of months. But I've had a great time with it. That's what I'm playing. Like, generally, if I'm gaming right now, I'm probably playing Elite Dangerous.
Is it going to be available for the 360 or just Xbox One?
Just Xbox One. Because it's pretty fancy.
Yeah, to flip things around, like, we noticed, like, hey, you know, this video game looks like real places. There are people, like, that have never really been to Italy or been to places like that. There are tour destinations and tour packages now for, like, Assassin's Creed 2. So if you want to go to Italy
that's kinda cool.
And go around to all the different places, and, like, for instance, you know, they're doing, like, hey, we're going to take a picture of you in front, you know, in-game. And then take a picture in front of the same building. And
right.
Here they're doing that. So they're arranging things where you can go and get like 15 selfies in all the different places you want.
Do they actually set it up so you can assassinate someone too?
That's extra. I think that's the ISIS special, and I don't think you want to do that.
I bet somebody could work that out for you.
But you know a guy in Italy.
But that kind of virtual virtual tourism, though, is going to cause it to where you don't even have to go. It's going to be so real. They're going to be able to render these places in such detail, all the way down to the brushstrokes of the Mona Lisa.
Sure.
You'll be able to go to take a virtual tour of the Louvre or
holodeck.
Take a virtual tour and shoot people while you're there, so it could be like a first person.
Then I'll never have to leave my house.
Be great if you could go into virtual reality and take virtual photos. Not just screenshots.
Can I take a virtual selfie of my virtual avatar inside virtual reality?
Can you take your selfie stick and swipe the person just touched you?
Here's one good thing about Italy. I think Vatican City and a lot of the museums have started banning selfie sticks because they're afraid that people are going to be in the museums or in whatever. Someone might get bumped and then the selfie stick suddenly takes out a Da Vinci.
Did you see the thing about the two American tourists who just scratched their names? Yeah, in the Colosseum.
No.
This was just last week. They were arrested for doing it, and it was two American tourists who did it.
Two
American ladies who scratched their name in the side of the Colosseum, and which is you know arrestable in Italy, in Rome, and they were quoted as saying you know I don't have the quote in front of me, but they were basically said we're really sorry, we know we did a terrible wrong thing, we just didn't realize it was as wrong as it is. You know, we thought this was, you know, just kind of, you know, slap on the wrist. Oh, you scratched your name on that wall, but actually you defaced a, you know, millennia's old, like,
World Heritage.
Dormas.
20,000 euro fine is what they look
for. How many?
20,000 euro.
SPGR sucks.
And then 4-month jail term commuted, it looks like.
Wow. Yeah.
Ouch.
American consulate's not going to help you there.
Yeah, Californians age 21 and 25.
Well, the really interesting thing was the article that I read about it had an example also on there of like graffiti from the side of the Colosseum, but graffiti that was made in like, you know, 2000 years ago or
whatever. Well, the Vandals,
and it was like, it was like me and Augustus and Clavius killed a fox here the other day. Rock.
And not like some Vandals, like a band of Vandals, but the Vandals. So not the band, but the actual,
the barbarians.
The people that came to the Germanic tribes that came and weren't so good for the ending of Rome. Those guys.
Sextus is stupid. For a good time call. For a good time call.
XVII. No, good for them. I think that, you know, when I was in London on my last trip, it was just amazing. We were watching the changing of the guard. And, you know, the selfie stick can serve two purposes. One, obviously, taking a picture of yourself in front of something. But if you're stuck inside of a crowd of people and you can't see over the person, they're like periscopes.
I thought you were going to say you could put it through the fence and turn it back around and take a picture of yourself. That probably wouldn't work out too well. Probably some sort of guard would come over and yank the selfie stick away.
Neil Young or someone, I forget, it seems maybe like a Nugent kind of thing to do. Someone made like a slap stick or something along those lines. So the main thing is if you see someone like actually taking a picture at a rock concert, you take this and you slap the thumb of their hand.
It was
one
of the Ramones or something.
There we go. One of the Ramones
did
that. Yeah, that's actually – I'm a fan of that.
Make it out of a Ramones 45.
Yes.
And it says beep. He says, where can you buy it?
Make
Be
your
a punk.
Own.
Make your own.
I do think that should be like – that should be socially acceptable. If you've got like a phone up during a show and you're obscuring someone else's thing, you should – you know, if Joe Ramone's there, you should be able to slap the phone out.
I was
going to
say, if you're at a Ramones concert, you'd probably just tackle the guy doing it.
Yeah.
You might break his hip depending upon
– periscope.
Depending upon where you are on the section.
Yeah, sadly, there's no reason to have a Ramones concert because anybody that you could – call qualify a Ramone. As Ramones yeah. and sound like yeah. the Ramones is no longer with us.
It makes me want to be
sedated.
It's
not like the deal where the drummer's cousin who once sat in with them takes the name and goes on tour.
Expedition 42 has touched down in Kazakhstan.
Excellent! It's our astronaut folks.
Oh, the ones that are coming back from ISIS?
Yeah.
I mean, ISS.
ISS.
I'm surprised they haven't changed the name of the International
The Islamic Space Station.
Don't go there. Don't go there.
Hopefully, Mr. Sagdeev doesn't find them first. But
no, is who's on Expedition 42?
Is it time for our space talk?
Yeah, I can.
Oh yeah, are we at?
Hold on, who is on Expedition 42? Because if it's is Chris Cassidy on there?
My wife.
She is Cassidy already landed. I guess Cassidy's already landed.
All right, so for those of you who may not be aware, how long have those guys been up there?
I'm looking.
There's
Expedition 42 is the 42nd and current expedition to the International Space Station began on
November 2014. Yep.
Okay. So
Samantha Christopher Eddy is up there. I know Samantha Christopher Eddy is an ESA astronaut. She's awesome. She's very active on Twitter, and she's like, she kicks ass.
So they brought him back down on a Soyuz capsule, which actually lands on the ground.
Ouch. On the ground. If you look at it, Kazakhstan, like you've got Siberia pretty much north, this huge swath of just, you know, just blank Russian wilderness. And then if you go a little bit too far, I mean, I don't know if that's true. I guess it was intentional, but south of that is the beautiful land of Kazakhstan.
The rumor is that the rumor that I've heard from many different sources is that the Soyuz landing craft that depart the International Space Station and land on the steppes of Kazakhstan, in somewhat gray violation of international treaty, do contain at least one shotgun because of the necessity
Keep
to shoot wolves.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Yeah, all the American crews, they go up, and they actually saw a special. The Russians have a space gun that they can come back down with because they do. Like, our guys splashed down in the Pacific somewhere. These guys could splash down anywhere along
splash
Siberia,
not
or
right
not
word.
Splash down, I guess snow down.
Yeah.
Snowden.
If you splash down, it's a
soft landing.
It's a smash down.
Smash down.
Smash down.
But yes, they might get out, and they're going to have to go up against wolves and bears and lions and tigers and all kinds
and
of stuff.
Well, if they go off course, I mean, if the landing goes to plan, they'll be picked up relatively quickly. But if they go off course, there's a chance that it may be hours or potentially days before they're retrieved, because it's just a lot of empty nothing out there. And yeah, there is wolves. There is wolves in Kazakhstan.
It's the TP-82, a.k.a. the Russian Space Pistol.
It's
basically like a sawed-off shotgun
with like
a
pistol.
They use
like a Find My Astronaut app on their phone.
I guess you could. They would use something with GLONASS probably, because that's the Russian GPS. But yeah, they probably do.
So it's landed? They've recovered them?
Yeah, yeah. KD5 said, so I don't know if they've recovered them, but they tracked the touchdown somewhere in Kazakhstan.
I
was looking for the page and the describing the landing, then I got totally sidetracked by the whole space gun thing. So let me go back to...
Too bad
they're
it's
landing.
Not a space motorcycle.
For during this whole thing at home, you need to look up the Kazakhstan national anthem on YouTube and play that. Which I think there was it at the Olympics where they played the Borat Kazakhstan?
No, that was at a local. It was, I think, during the movie at a local rodeo where he actually got out and he asked to sing. And was this
one? No, but there was that. Except there was also some sort of official event where the athlete from Kazakhstan got a medal,
and they didn't know.
And when
know.
They played
that was
the anthem, they played the Borat one. You know, Kazakhstan, our prostitutes.
It was in, wasn't at the Olympics.
Let's that was on. A mess up, though. I want to say it happened in the UK somewhere, possibly.
No, it happened
that.
In, hurry up, no? Borat anthem stuns Kazakh gold medalist in Kuwait.
Kuwait, okay.
It apparently took a bit, though, before they realized what it was, because it's not different than the, you know, it's not a real.
It's only once the lyrics start talking about...
Our prostitutes.
All of the terrible things that are in those lyrics. That in no way reflect
so to clarify,
anything about the greatness of the actual nation of Kazakhstan.
It was a fake anthem, right?
Yes, it was from the Borat
made up
from the Borat movie.
Right. Not real. Not real anthem.
Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world. All other countries are run by little girls.
All right.
Kazakhstan number
Don't
one.
Make us send you back to San Antonio.
All right, what's next?
This one's an interesting one. Remember the Philae, Philae, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing.
Oh, the lander.
The lander. They are they are preparing to wake it from its deep sleep in the shadows of Comet 67P. You know, when last we tuned in, they had landed it, and it ended up, like, in the shadow
it, like,
side.
Bounced.
And it needed sunlight to operate.
Precious electricity.
Yeah, they call it Comet 67P. It's also known as Churyumov-Gerasimenko.
Oh, I remember that several months ago, I remember that I specifically studied the pronunciation so that I could say it on the air here, and I have long since forgotten what it was supposed to be.
So the unexpectedly bouncy landing left it stranded in an area far colder and with far less sunlight than they had planned. It was able to carry out a number of experiments over the next 3 days, but then entered a low power state. Now, as the comet draws closer to the sun, there's more heat and light, so they're hoping to wake it up in the coming weeks.
Wake up. Wake up, little.
The project manager, Stefan Ulamek, said that Philae currently receives about twice as much solar energy as it did in November last year. It will probably still be too cold for the lander to wake up right now, but it's worth trying, and the prospects will improve with each passing day. Let's see. Oh, here, to give you an idea of what we're talking about, to wake it up completely, the interior of the craft must be at least minus 45 degrees Celsius. So that's worse. You know, there's the Fahrenheit thing. Minus 45 degrees Celsius, that's nearly minus 100 degrees.
Negative 40 Celsius and negative 40 Fahrenheit, that's that crossover point. That's where
same. Oh, so they're about the same number? Oh,
so
well,
it's still pretty darn cold.
Still freaking cold. And the solar panels must be receiving a minimum of 5.5 watts of power, so slightly more power than a MacBook.
That's called a callback.
Once the core systems realize that these criteria have been met, the lander will attempt to charge its battery, switching on its receiver every 30 minutes to listen for instructions from the orbiting Rosetta. The scientists say it's possible that Philae has already woken up, but the lander doesn't have enough power to communicate with Rosetta. So we'll keep an eye on that. Between the 11th and 20th of March, Rosetta will make a number of flybys during the daytime when that side of the comet is exposed to the sun, and they're hopeful that that's going to get that the rechargeable battery will work and that they can find out some more. On the downside, talking about stalled science, Curiosity on the surface of Mars had a short circuit, and so it is not doing anything until they can figure out the fault. Apparently, it refused to keep working until it could see a media screener of Chappie.
Yes. Damn, Chappie.
I watched that.
Chappie.
It had an...
Yeah, Barrett and I saw it.
Was it good?
Hey, thanks for the invite, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Groove.
Thanks for sharing.
What were you doing Saturday?
Yeah, nothing.
Wasn't watching Chappie.
Would have loved to have gone to a movie.
Hang out with our buds.
Has anyone else
show.
Seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Tell us all the spoilers. All the spoilers now on the air to screw everybody up.
No, I mean, no real spoilers, but...
Was it any good? I heard it got bad reviews. I heard
it did get bad reviews.
I heard it got bad reviews because the producer of the movie that everybody loves,
Blomkamp,
that they didn't feel like they were ready to get back on the Blomkamp bandwagon, but this movie didn't do it for him.
Well, that's sad because supposedly he's going to make an Aliens movie next. And
I thought it was good.
You did?
Yeah, I liked it.
Was it the proper amount?
I mean, it was like, you know, you take like Short Circuit and RoboCop and...
Is it like that
District
part
9
in Short Circuit 2 when he hooks up with the gang?
DeAntford, and that's pretty
Short
much
Circuit
it.
2.
That's one thing. So if people are DeAntford fans, they didn't really so much incorporate them into the movie as they more or less made them half the movie. They're
now,
like, all right,
they're
like, y'all go do your
them.
Thing, and
they,
it's just
they,
them
they
doing
wore
their thing.
The clothes they always wear. They acted
the
like
music.
They always
didn't they have some
much.
Kind of falling out with Neil Blomkamp? I heard
not with Neil Blomkamp, but I think Ninja was just being Ninja.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where I'm not really sure if it was real or if it was played up for...
If he was doing it in character?
Yeah, to basically try to get notoriety for being himself in
character. Yeah, the whole Alien announcement that he was doing that kind of sucked all the publicity out of the Chappie build-up, you know?
Well, if I had to choose between Chappie being a good movie and
if they waited a week, though, then instead of it being like, then it would have been, hey, tell us about your current movie, instead of this one that you haven't yet really started to even make that we want to talk to you about kind of thing.
It slipped to 28% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's
really?
Taken a dive since we last spoke.
Wow, because it used to be a lot higher. It was up around 70% or something.
Although on IMDb, it's got a
film
4.5 out of 5 stars, so who really knows?
We could talk about the new Alien movie. We could do like a 2-hour deconstruction of Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection and why they're terrible and why resetting the timeline like they did with the Superman follow-up, the erase Superman 3 and 4 is going
to
be a great idea.
Every time we get to the
universe.
Point where you want to talk about Alien or towards the end of the show.
I know, right?
Like Prometheus?
Do we like Prometheus? Tell us what to think.
We had high hopes for Prometheus. And we, the royal we, had very high hopes and came away mostly disappointed.
You know what?
Was the video game, what is it, Isolation or something, where you're on the space station?
It was a fabulous game. I loved it. Although, and it had a Rift, a Rift debug mode you could turn on and play, and you would think that would be awesome, but after 15 minutes I got so nauseous that I had to turn it off. But like when it worked, and like when I was holding on to my lunch, like having the alien jump out and murder me was awesome.
The Isolation is your Ripley's daughter on a space station.
Yeah, they sort of back.
I saw something about that.
It's a good game.
I was going to say about Prometheus. For me, I got lucky with Prometheus because it was not on my radar at all. I mean, I kind of knew it was there. I'd seen a couple of trailers, but I didn't pay much attention to them.
There you go.
Never went to go see it, and I got to see it. And unfortunately, it was on the small screen. I saw it on the plane going somewhere. But
right.
I had no idea that it was tied into the Alien.
Oh, really?
You know
well,
what
that must have been amazing.
So watching it kind of unfold and tell the story, it's like, wait a minute. This is kind of cool.
Do you know what I watched instead of Prometheus?
Chappie.
I watched Prote. Because I was in Russia, and I watched Prometheus, but it wasn't subtitled. It was dubbed, and there were no English subtitles. So I really
didn't. You know, I actually bet it's a better movie that way.
I really didn't understand it, but from what I understand, most people didn't understand it when it was in English either. So
it could have been the problem with Prometheus, the overarching problem, because it had lots of problems. The overarching problem was that it could have been so much better. They could have done a closer tie-in. I think the movie suffered from Damon Lindelof, is that how you say his name? It suffered, I think, from Lindelof's involvement. He lostified the movie up. He tried to make it into something more, much more complicated.
Tried to make
it
a big old space baby.
Yeah. And it just wasn't. I mean, it could have been a beautiful Alien prequel that you know defined the universe, and we got to see some cool stuff happen, and didn't go into really stupid territory, and unfortunately they went like right into stupid territory. didn't mean it wasn't a good movie. It had its parts that were quite excellent. I bought the Blu-ray. I liked watching it. It just wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't nearly as bad as Alien Resurrection, but it wasn't nearly as good as it could have been.
Game over, man.
Yeah, and with the days of the internet now, it's kind of, it gets harder to not get exposed to not just spoilers, because there's plenty of stuff is just the like conceptual lead up to them making the movie.
Oh yeah.
Half the time before the movies come out, I thought it already was in the theaters and gone.
Well,
you know, because
so much leaks out, right?
And because they do all the promo stuff like 60 days before the movie comes out, and that's when they're on all the talk shows and all this.
Well,
it's like,
and it was even
come out at Christmas.
It was even crazier with Prometheus because Ridley Scott, of course, directed the first movie, Alien, in 79, I think, was released in 79, made in 78. Ridley Scott, the director, has been saying in, recently the Aliens, they call it the Quadrilogy DVD set, came out a few years ago, and then the updated Blu-ray set came out 2 or 3 years ago. And they've got Ridley Scott, who had been at this point where he was like ready to kind of revisit the universe, had been talking in all of these making of specials and like little like talking head segments included on all these DVDs, talking about how he wanted to go back to the universe, and he had some ideas about like, you know, the big alien spaceship they find in Alien. And he's like, and I've always wondered, you know, what's the story of that guy in the chair that they find, the big alien? What's his story? Where did these aliens come from? And so he had been kind of thinking about it for years and years and years, and then committed to making Prometheus, and the internet, of course, exploded, and everyone was like, he's making this alien prequel. He said he's going to make an alien prequel. And then as it went from, you know, development hell to solid development to pre-production to production, it sort of just got further and further away from the original idea as Ridley Scott started to really, you know, get his Ridley, because Ridley Scott is
get
kind
his Ridley
of a,
on.
Get his Ridley on. He's a very intuitive filmmaker, and by that I mean Scott tends to intuit his way through the filmmaking process rather than
takes his
to
plans
a plan.
And throws them out the window.
Yes, he really
and he didn't
does.
Have H.R. Geiger around to creep him out constantly.
And he,
while
yeah, well, Geiger passed away just
Geiger.
Last year, I think it's Geiger. It's Geiger. But
not on this.
But his
gift.
Countering.
Not on this gift. But so yeah, he kind of, I mean, as he got into the process of making the movie, he was like, I feel like we should sort of go down this path, and that's what he does with all he did it with. There's, if you guys have listened to the Gladiator commentary on the Gladiator DVD, it starts off with that scene where, like, the Maximus's forces are, like, setting up to fight the Goths or whoever they're fighting, and, like, they have, like, this trench of, like, gasoline that they pour in front of the archers, and they dip their arrows into it and shoot flaming arrows. And on the DVD commentary, he's like, we had historians on set, and they were like, they never did this. The Romans didn't do this. And I told them to shut up and that it was a great idea and I felt it would look really neat and we went with it. And that's kind of how Scott does his movies.
Yeah, little known story, Alien actually started out as a buddy cop road movie.
It really did.
And got way off. He just followed his instincts. It ended up in space.
It was actually a Muppet film.
Alien had a pretty tortured genesis, much like the creature
itself. Remade later
as
Turner and Hooch.
So anyway, yeah, so from Prometheus just sort of, you know, Scott turned it into his movie. He did it the way he wanted to. It wasn't helped by Damien Lindelof's involvement in making the script turn into Lost-style insanity. And the movie that we got was not the movie that we could have had.
Well, if you ever want to hear the kind of movie that you got is, you know, what you could have had thing is, look up some, it's out there on YouTube, Kevin Smith talking about Superman, writing Superman.
Oh my gosh.
And then
yes,
you will learn a whole lot about how, you will learn a whole lot about why, like, superhero movies up until, what, the past 5 years or so, completely sucked is because the people who were making them were clue-free and came up with dumb ideas.
All their own ideas.
Are you familiar with the Jodorowsky Dune?
Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that documentary.
That documentary.
That
is
was
amazing.
So great. The best part. So this is, I mean, I know we're at the bottom of the hour here, but this is a documentary that just came out about the movie Dune that we that almost got made.
Wow.
Before the Lynch
David
Dune.
Lynch.
Right.
Jodorowsky is
and he had cast
crazy.
He had cast Salvador Dali in the
as
movie
the Emperor.
Mick Jagger. As
Sting, as
the list was amazing.
And he had artists like Geiger.
Geiger was
Geiger
in fact,
on board.
Geiger's involvement in Dune led to his involvement in
well, a lot of the people that he had involved that signed on to do this movie that never got made went on to make Alien.
Yes, in fact, that's kind of the thesis of that movie is that or of that documentary is that Jodorowsky's Dune failing led to the pre-production and production concentrated all of this talent and led to kind of the birth of most of the modern era sci-fi blockbusters of the 70s and 80s, Blade Runner, Alien, just tons of these things came directly or indirectly.
They made correlations because he did a storybook. I mean, there's like apparently they made this book, this solid book with the whole story.
Like a Gutenberg Bible. Like
yeah, they gave all the different movie producing places. Or what it's going to call them, theaters.
Studios.
And the book is amazing. The concept art and all the way that he envisioned things. And the documentary is really worth seeing.
Maybe we should have a sci-fi special Geek Radio episode one of these days and really go nuts on this.
All right, well, we can do that.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, we should probably plan a little bit so we can get some audio clips and then have that.
Let's do it for
Game Over, man!
Let's do it for the week of Tal Day.
What's
is that, May the
4th? May 25th?
Let's do it around May 4th. Star Wars Day.
Oh, May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you. Whichever one of those. May has Tal Day and May the 4th be with you all the day. That'd be a good sci-fi some week during there. And then, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, all right.
That
we'll music tells
that
us
so.
We've got to go. We'll make it so. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee. And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse.
Google. We'll be right back.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
The 2015 Sounds of Texas Music Series is about to begin. KPFT Houston is proud to help present three outstanding concerts at the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe with legendary musicians from Texas and beyond. Saturday, March 21st, one of Texas's finest singer-songwriter couples, Kelly Willis and Bruce Robison, will take the stage at the Crichton Theater. Rising star John Fulbright will also perform a complete set. Saturday, May 9th, three great performers will share the stage in an unforgettable evening featuring legendary Texas rocker Joe Ely, soulful songstress Ruthie Foster, and gifted storyteller Paul Thorne. The series finishes Saturday, June 6th, with the terrific double bill of Uncle Lucius and beloved Texas singer-songwriter Ray Wiley Hubbard. For season tickets, call 936-441-7469, extension 201. Visit SoundsOfTexasMusicSeries.com for more details. Don't miss the Sounds of Texas Music Series.